Welcome to the Sales Readiness Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Sales Readiness Group, an industry-leading sales training company that helps businesses develop highly effective sales organizations. For more information, visit us at salesreadinessgroup.com. This audio track features Norman Bihar and Ray Makala on episode 25 through 28 from our Q&A video series SRG Insights, where we answer your questions about sales, sales management, and sales training. In this audio track, we discuss the problem with pushing to close a sale, discussing pricing prematurely, measuring sales coaching effectiveness, and the best approach to sales training. Enjoy.
Should a salesperson ever push to close a deal? I know many people say a salesperson should push to close a deal. I'm one of those people who, if you push me, you will almost certainly lose. I may buy eventually, just probably not from you. This is partially one reason why I hated salespeople for so long, even though in reality, I was one too. I just never saw it that way.
Well, I really appreciate that question. And I think it's one we've all run into. And frankly, it's one that maybe gives salespeople a bad name. That pushy, slippery salesperson that's trying to get you to buy, that's trying every trick in the book. And, you know, guess what? As the question points out, it doesn't feel very good. And so I think we really need to look at what's going on in that situation when the salesperson feels like they have to push. And on the flip side, where the customer or prospect feels like they're being pushed into making a close, what's really going on there? And it really speaks to this idea of being aligned with the buyer and being aligned with the process they're going through to make that purchase. And I think if we don't take time to consider that, then we may be pushing and trying to fulfill our needs, which is to get to the close, and the buyer may be at a very different point in their purchase process. The typical customer or prospect goes through some pretty predictable stages when they're thinking about making a purchase. They may be open even to having a consideration or having a conversation. They really start to focus in on what's important to them and define their priorities and their requirements. And then once they've done that, they may start to gain knowledge about the different solutions and what's actually out there for them to choose from before they enter into an evaluation stage and they start looking at the trade-offs and the pricing and really how the different products or solutions stack up before ultimately they make a decision. And I think, unfortunately, if we're just looking at the salesperson's perspective, they may be pushing for the close when the customer is really back and still trying to focus in on what's important and define their priorities, or they may be gaining knowledge about what else is out there. They're not ready to buy today. Well, that's not to say we should just step back and wait for them to come to that conclusion. I think we really need to work hard to identify where are they in that process and what can we do to help them through, to become their advisor, to really point out, hey, there may be some stages you're going through. Can I provide you information? Maybe I can ask some questions to help understand your needs so that I can better inform you and provide that information to help move you along. I think when we carefully take the time to really ask those questions and understand where they are, now we can determine, okay, what actions are we expecting the customer to take at each stage that suggests they're ready to move forward and ultimately get to the point of purchase? So if we're looking for those actions like, well, they've actually articulated what their needs are. Maybe they've even responded to a request that we've made about their priorities and they're able to articulate their priorities. They've able to share the time frame for making a decision. Well, if we haven't asked those questions, if we don't understand what those answers are and we're pushing for a close, they're going to get reluctant. And again, as the question points out, that person is likely going to push back and may even seek another solution because they're just not at that stage yet. They're not ready to buy. So as a salesperson, I think we need to be thinking about our role as the advisor, as the consultant that really assesses where that customer is in that process and then helps to guide them through each stage, paying particular attention to what needs to happen for them to get ready so that when ultimately we get to that point of making the request or that commitment, they're in alignment. And then it's just a matter of saying yes, of confirming the details and moving forward with the deal. So again, I think it's a great question because it is one where if we're pushing because it's the end of the month or the end of the quarter, you know, that doesn't mean anything to the customer. And frankly, they're not really interested about helping you meet your quota. What they're interested in is solving their problem. So think about that. How can we help solve their problem? What can we do to help move them through the process? And I think if we get to the end of those stages and we're aligned with the customer, we'll get that commitment in the end and we'll close that deal.
Recently, we had a customer call us and tell us they liked our solution, but they are about to sign with a competitor. Since we were not properly engaged, we did not give them the pricing and they closed the contract with the competitor. What would you have done? We often talk to developers who ask us about our pricing for our solutions when they don't even have the budget for sponsoring a lunch. How would we handle pricing questions prematurely?
Well, thank you for that question. And actually, I think there are a couple of really interesting points that are packaged up in there. And specifically the question about when do you disclose pricing in the sales process? And can we appropriately qualify the budget earlier on to avoid wasting time? But I'd like to consider, I guess, a couple of questions as we break that down that might help us determine how to continue. And the first is really, are they serious about engaging with us and considering us as a partner? What I mean by that is often in sales, it seems like the sales professional ends up doing all of the work. Send me this information, send me this pricing, put this proposal together, and then I may or may not get back to you, or I may just actually be considering you as another column on my spreadsheet so that when I make the valuation, I feel better about that decision. So I think we really need to put some actions back on the prospect or the customer and see if we can get them to engage and respond in a bit of a give and take. So what I mean by that is if we're going to provide that pricing information, I might put a couple of stipulations around it. For instance, I'm happy to give you that pricing information, but it wouldn't really be appropriate for me to do that at this point without further discussion about your priorities and your needs and really understanding the impact of this problem is having on your organization and the impact the solution will actually provide. So what I'd like to request is just a 15 to 30 minute conversation to really understand those needs better before I provide that pricing. And then after I do, I'd like the opportunity to present our proposal to your executive team. And so I think this does a couple of things for us. It lets us know just how serious they are. Are they willing to engage in a little bit of give and take? And, you know, the third tactic, and I learned this from a mentor long ago, is to really redefine the rules of engagement a bit. So find out about the timeline and the decision-making process, and then ask for an extension. So we might say, you know, we're happy to do that, but we need a little bit more time to thoughtfully prepare our response and our pricing. So we'd request a week-long extension. This does a really interesting thing. If they already have somebody in mind and they're really just using us to fill out the RFP responses, then they're likely not to give us that extension. And I think that tells us that our time might be better well spent focusing on new prospects and new opportunities and maybe getting ahead of the decision-making process next time instead of being at that point where they're already considering our competitor and ready to make a decision. If they give us the extension, great, then we can have that meeting, we can further understand the requirements and put together a more thoughtful proposal. So I think another question we'd really want to understand is, you know, what's the pricing for? Do we fully understand those requirements? And I don't just mean maybe an RFI or RFP, but have we had a chance to have a discussion and dialogue with the customer to get to that next level and really help them develop the need and understand that pain in a way that we can help position our solution as a way to uniquely solve it? Again, unless we've had those conversations, I don't think it probably makes sense to proceed at that point. We're better off, frankly, getting those types of opportunities out of our pipeline sooner and focusing on those that we really think that we can close. The final piece I will mention, though, is I think around BANT, and we've all heard about that in terms of budget, authority, the need, and timing. Looking at budget, I think it is important to say, well, can you help me understand your budget decision process? Do you have budget already allocated, or is budget something you're going to go after? And will the pricing influence that, or are you actually at the point of making the decision, and this is just a checkpoint moving forward? Because again, I think if they don't have budget set aside, if they haven't already allocated it, and we're not engaged at the decision maker level, then the chances of us really winning that opportunity are probably pretty slight at that point. And again, this mentor used to share the words, bad news early is good news. So let's think about that and see if we can't find out if there's bad news, disqualify that opportunity and move on something that might be more appropriate. Thank you very much.
What tools and processes would you use to measure frontline manager coaching quality?
You know, that's a really great question. And, you know, we're all looking to improve the quality of sales coaching. Sales coaching, from our perspective, has one of the highest ROIs possible. And you think about that, the reason sales coaching is so powerful is the amount of leverage a manager can drive through sales coaching. Let's say you're a sales manager with 5 to 7 sales reps, and you're able to help them either improve win rates or improve the quality of their selling skills, that's going to have a major impact on your overall organization. You're also really going to empower them to be able to solve their own problems and really take your organization forward and even build the next group of sales managers or sales leaders based on the quality of coaching you provide. So what I really like about this question is that when you think about quality, it really comes down to having managers who can use the right processes and then associated with those processes, the right tools. So I think from a definitional standpoint, I'd like to first kind of categorize coaching into two areas. The first being what I would call skills coaching. And that's when a manager works with each salesperson on their team to improve selling skills. And then the second area is really one of opportunity coaching. And most sales managers have really good instincts in this area because it's about helping coaching on specific deals that are in the pipeline to either qualify or disqualify those deals, but ultimately to improve win rates. So let me start with the first one, really about skills coaching and the associated process. So think about what's the purpose of skills coaching. And the purpose of skills coaching is to improve selling skills. So we like to recommend that the first tool a manager uses is an assessment. And ideally, this assessment is completed both by the manager and the sales rep. So if I use the SRG assessment from our sales coaching program as an example, we focus on 24 key behaviors with 3 behavior statements for each of 8 different selling skills. That could be prospecting, call planning, managing feedback, negotiation, gaining commitment. But these are all crucial selling skills for salespeople. And then we have the salesperson and the sales manager each complete that assessment. And then they collaborate and they put together a very focused coaching plan on 1 to 2 skill areas that they can improve on over the course of a calendar quarter. And then we go into a 5-step process. And that 5-step process begins with, as we just discussed, the creating of that coaching plan, then planning a coaching visit. So now you're going to go out with a salesperson on a call and you're going to observe them. You really need to plan for that call, understand the background, what's happened in the past, what's transpired, and then actually to go on the call and then observe the call. And I think this is where many managers run into difficulty is they'll start thinking, even though they're going there as a coaching call, they can't resist the temptation to sell. But if you're really looking for skills improvement, you have to actually look at the underlying skills. And then following that call, what you want to do is to debrief. And again, debriefing is really an art. You don't want to start by saying what they did wrong. You want to offer 1 or 2 areas of encouragement, things they did right, and then really get the sales rep to analyze the call. And then you want to follow up. So there is a 5-step process. But inherent within that 5-step process are a couple of key tools that also improve the quality of coaching. Again, the coaching assessment and then the coaching plan. And then ultimately, as these skills improve and you see those skills improve in future calls, you want to reset those plans again with the sales rep so you can focus on new skills and keep driving to improve skills and quality over a period of time. So let me get to the second area, which is the opportunity coaching. And opportunity coaching is really when the sales manager meets with each salesperson and reviews the specific opportunities in their pipeline with the goal of helping them either better qualify or in some cases disqualify opportunities, but ultimately with the goal of developing a strategy for each opportunity to improve win rates. So the likelihood of winning goes up. So that's the outcome you're looking for. And so the process really involves 5 key questions you would ask. And these 5 key questions can be actually set up in terms of a tool or template that a sales rep would complete, possibly in advance of or following each time you meet with them to really assess whether they have a handle on the overall opportunity and really have a good strategy. And those questions are as follows. First, what is the customer's business need? And even though it's a pretty simple question, it's surprising how often the salesperson's response to that question is kind of fuzzy. So if they can't clearly articulate the business need, they really need to go back and ask more questions and really understand what is the problem the customer is trying to solve, or how are we going to put that customer in a better situation than they are now. The second question, which closely ties to the business need, is what is the unique value that we're bringing to the customer? So based on an understanding of their business need, we need to really set ourselves up in terms of how are we uniquely different and better positioned to win that opportunity. The third question really gets to who are the decision makers and what's our relationship with them? And all too often, we have great relationships maybe with one or two key influencers, but do we really understand the decision-making process, who's involved in that decision, and have a strategy to gain access? And again, I think that often leads to a mapping of the organization and really making sure that we're making contact with all the right people who are the decision makers and influencers. The fourth question they should think about is, who's a competition and how are they going to try and beat us? Because if you have a good understanding of the competitive landscape, you can then start to map out what are your competitive strengths and weaknesses and really develop some key win themes. And that leads to the final question, why will we win? And I think when they can articulate to you with confidence why you're going to win, then you're going to really see that they've done the other four steps well. So again, we've talked about a five-step process for skills coaching and the associated tools, talked about a five-step questioning strategy for opportunity coaching and an associated tool. And my hope is that this helps answer your question about the use of tools and processes to really improve the quality and measure the quality of sales coaching by your managers. Thank you.
Nasir Nadiadwala, CEO of Maruf Marketing Consultancy, asks, should we include sales training as a complete course instead of a few hour workshop?
That's a really interesting question because sales training is being delivered in a variety of different ways given technologies, distributed sales organizations. And what I would say is I wouldn't really think about it necessarily as either a course or just a couple hour workshop. I'd really think about it programmatically or think about it as a program. And programs typically have, you know, three aspects to them, a before, a during, and an after. And so when you think about it as a program, the first thing you want to think about are what are the training objectives? What's going to change as a result of this training, and why is that going to be sustainable? So some common training objectives today could be improved prospecting skills, either to acquire new accounts or go deeper within existing accounts. We're seeing a lot of interest around pre-call planning and research, given how difficult it is to get appointments. Doing a better job of asking questions and active listening skills to really understand at a deeper level what the customer's needs and priorities are, being able to manage objections, and, you know, obviously being able to gain commitment. So those are some of the key skills that you might focus on in a training program. What's really important to think about is, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the before, during, and after. Before could include things like consultation, so you really understand the training audience, who they're selling to, what the sales cycle is, what the competitive landscape is like, customization so that the program is highly relevant to the learners, and I'll touch on that a little bit more, and also assessment so you really get a good benchmark of where people are before the training. And what we found is that there's five key factors that affect the quality of training. And the first one is really motivation. And these are all covered in a white paper, and you can download this white paper off our website. It's called Maximizing the Effectiveness of Sales Training. But the first one's motivation. That really gets to, is there executive sponsorship from the sales leaders? Is there a communication as to what is the program involve? Why are we doing it? Why is it important? What's going to change as a result of this program? And equally important, active involvement from the frontline sales managers. So I'll just give a quick example. We've been working with a large industrial company, and we were scheduled to go out and do a two-day workshop, and they had already done the consultation and customization. And the sales leader, senior sales leader, who was a president of that division, brought in their vice presidents and brought in the team a half day early. And they did pre-work related to real-world accounts, and they were primed and ready for the training. And those VPs and the president themselves really participated in the program. And that creates a lot of accountability, both from management and the participants. The second issue that I mentioned I touch on is the one of customization. Salespeople make decisions fairly rapidly. And so they're thinking, is this program really relevant to me? And so I think it's not that difficult to do. You really think about what are the exercises, what are the role plays. And I'll give the example of managing objections, as opposed to just going through an objection handling model, being able to apply that objection handling model to real world objections. So actually thinking through what are our top objections, and then in the role plays, actually applying what they've just learned so that they're getting very practical skills application. The third area is spaced learning, and this kind of gets to the genesis of your question in terms of, you know, should it be a course or should it be a shorter workshop? Spaced learning says it, the best kind of learning is blended learning. So again, thinking about what's going to happen before, maybe an online assessment, what's going to happen during the workshop, maybe it's a two-day on-site, and then what's going to happen afterwards? Are there online reinforcement sessions? Are we incorporating e-learning? Are we sending out tips and techniques on a weekly basis? So again, thinking about that use of spaced learning and technology to really support your program goals. The fourth area where a lot of training fails is reinforcement. And that's really unfortunate because it's so easy to reinforce training today. You can have online reinforcement sessions. You can have training snippets. You can have sales simulations. And most importantly, you want to get your sales managers involved and coaching to the skills that were learned so that they're covering these skills in their sales meetings. They're observing these skills on sales calls. They're putting together personalized coaching plans for each person that attended the training. And those coaching plans are focusing on the one or two key skills they really need to improve on. And then over time, you can modify those plans. And you're looking for consistent improvement. And then another area where a lot of organizations struggle is measurement. And the reason they usually struggle there is because the program was not, was again delivered more as a course as opposed to a program. So by thinking through what's going to change as a result, you can then measure behavior change. And behavior change, for example, overcoming objections, just going back to that example, you could observe on a sales call, did they apply the model? Are they using it? And then over time, you can look at what we call level four assessments or level four feedback in terms of business results. Are we getting higher win rates? Are we getting improved margins? Are we seeing accelerated ramp-up time? So again, it's not that difficult to measure programs, particularly when you've set out those goals in advance. So just to conclude, I think it was a really interesting question. We encourage our clients and everyone to think about their training as a program with a before, during, and after. And I hope that helps answer your question. And good luck and much success in all your training endeavors.
Thank you for listening. If you found this content helpful, please leave us a positive review on iTunes and share this track with your network. Also, you may be interested in our new book, The High Impact Sales Manager, a no-nonsense practical guide to improve your team's sales performance. To learn more and buy a copy, go to bit.ly/SRPbook. Again, that's bit.ly/SRPbook. Thanks again for listening, and remember, better skills produce better results.